Hi, and welcome to Guideposts. I'm your volunteer reader, Sandy Summers. Today, we continue reading from the February-March 2026 issue of Guideposts magazine with articles like Rediscovering Our Joy, as well as stories from Guideposts' online weekly inspiration. Guideposts, your weekly inspiration from March 16th, 2026. How did they know? A story that changed me. In more than a decade of editing newsletters at Guideposts, I've read thousands of remarkable stories, but if you asked me to choose a favorite, just one, it would be today's featured article. It's a story about the Elephant Whisperer and the lasting effect of his legacy, a story that will make you question everything you thought you knew about love, loss, and the bonds between living things. Read it, then ask yourself, how did they know? Sabra Ciccinelli, Senior Editor. An Elephant Herd Honors the Man Who Gave Them a Home by Francois Malby Anthony. 2 days after Lawrence Anthony, the man known as the Elephant Whisperer, died, the 21 elephants to whom he'd given safe haven came to say goodbye. I can still hear them, the rumbling that vibrated through the reserve that dry evening in March. Their grief-filled moans, the agitated movements of their ears, those big eyes fixed on me and me alone. My husband Lawrence always said there were things in this world that cannot be explained by reason, cannot be seen, deep roots that connect all living things, humans and animals. It wasn't until that night, 2 days after Lawrence died, that I truly understood. This was a man who'd somehow charmed me into leaving my native France for an old Dutch farmhouse out on the savanna of Zululand in South Africa. A man who suddenly suggested we buy an old game reserve and transform it into Thula Thula, a lodge that an animal haven where leopards, zebras, and white rhinos could roam free. A man who, after watching a news report on the Iraq war, sneaked into Baghdad in the midst of battle to rescue trapped zoo animals. And then, of course, there were the elephants. Everyone called Lawrence the Elephant Whisperer. He earned the nickname after adopting a herd of 9 delinquent elephants about to be put to death. The herd was prone to escaping its protected habitat and rampaging through populated areas. Dangerous. Lawrence's mind was made up, though. Maybe the elephants kept wandering because they weren't in the right home, he said. He had no knowledge of wild African elephants, yet night after night, he camped out with them to earn their trust, a move that almost got him trampled. He sang to them, talked to them. Crazy, people said. But little by little, the herd took him in. First the matriarch, Nana, then the rest. They forged a deep bond, one based on trust and respect. The elephants stopped escaping and made Thula Thula their home. Sometimes I've tagged along with Lawrence on his visits to the elephants deep in the bush. Nana would extend her trunk to him and caress his face as if he were a member of the family. The herd increased to 21 elephants, and our property doubled over the years. But the bond remained. So did Lawrence's nickname, though he preferred to be called the Elephant Listener. I don't have a special talent, he told me. The elephants talk to me if they want to. If they don't want to, I don't insist. I just listen. I only wish he'd listen to me every now and then. Lawrence was physically strong, a robust 6'3", but lately he'd been having heart trouble. In September, at the age of 61, he'd suffered his second heart attack. He wasn't supposed to fly, but he insisted on traveling to Johannesburg for a week-long business trip to help advance the mission of Thula Thula. Francois, I'll be fine, he said before he left. There's no need to fret. The call came at 7 o'clock in the morning on Friday, March 2nd, 2012. I was awake early, straightening up the house in preparation for Lawrence's return. On the phone was David, Lawrence's right-hand man, sobbing. I caught only snippets. Lawrence, unconscious, heart attack. I'm so sorry, Francois, he said. He's gone. I clutched the phone. Impossible, impossible, I whispered. But deep down, I knew it was true. The news hit Thula Thula like a bomb. Our staff of 70 was inconsolable. Lawrence wasn't just the boss. His Sulu name was Mkulu, or grandfather. That's how everyone saw him. I knew they needed me to be strong, to assure them we'd be okay even without Lawrence, but I couldn't think, couldn't speak. My head was lost in memories. Like the first time we'd met, waiting for a taxi in London, where we had both gone on business. It was freezing, a mix of rain and snow. I finally made it to the front of the line. The concierge asked if I'd mind sharing a ride with the man at the back, also headed to the convention center. Lawrence was wearing a bright blue windbreaker in the middle of January as if he were on safari. No way was I sharing a ride with that guy. No, no, I said. To my great surprise, I ran into him later at the tube station. It was hard to miss that windbreaker. This time I introduced myself, apologized for my rudeness. It was one of those moments orchestrated by that invisible force Lawrence believed in. We met for dinner and a jazz show. 1 year later, I left Paris, headed for South Africa. It was easy to face the unknown with Lawrence. He made me less fearful. I didn't want to face the unknown without him. Didn't want to live in a world without his fierce spirit and generosity. Life without Lawrence? Impossible. Impossible. 2 days after Lawrence's death, a Sunday, I was still holed up in our bedroom. People passed in and out of the house, paying their respects. It made no difference to me. "They're here," someone said with a gasp. Who was here? The voice was followed by shouts, all kinds of commotion. What was going on? I dragged myself downstairs and opened the front door. The staff was gathered outside, all staring in the same direction, eyes wide. On the other side of the fence on our property were 21 distinct gray shapes, the elephants, Lawrence's elephants. Nana gazed at me, so did the rest, as if they were waiting for something or someone. They remained like that for more than an hour, then marched up and down along the fence, rumbling. The same noise they'd always used to talk with Lawrence. They seemed edgy, distressed. Finally, they lined up, one by one, and made their solemn procession back into the bush. The work at Thula Thula continues, as my husband would have wanted it to. Most people have moved on, but an elephant never forgets. The year after Lawrence's death on March 4th, the elephants returned, led by Nana in the same procession. The year after that, again on March 4th, they were back, and again on March 4th the following year. They mourned him like one of their herd. How did they know? Who sent them? What does it mean? Some things in this world are beyond human understanding, cannot be explained by reason, cannot be seen. From Guideposts Online, your weekly inspiration, March 23rd, 2026. A penny worth picking up. I was mentally checking off my to-do list, my son's theater practice, my daughter's midterms, a looming work trip, when the unexpected leaped into my arms, literally. It's not just every day that a scared Boston Terrier launches herself across your path on a busy New York street, but that was my Monday. For the next few hours, my busy schedule was replaced with trips to the vet, scanning for a microchip, and roaming the neighborhood asking strangers, "Is this your dog?" No one seemed to know. Back home, we fed and walked her, and within minutes, Penny, as my kids dubbed her, was snoring away on a red pillow we found in the back of a closet. Her little snorts interrupted the quiet of the night, and for a moment, it was the calmest I had felt all week. When the local rescue volunteer messaged saying they could take her, I hesitated. Is her owner out there looking for her? Will they really place her somewhere that'll be good for her? Should we keep her? We already had a dog, and a second one was out of the question. You have to let her go, a friend said. Surrender, another friend reminded me. After losing my godmother earlier this year and then my beloved aunt who raised me, only a few weeks after that, I was becoming an expert on letting go. We met with the rescue volunteer to drop her off. That was so hard, my daughter said to me, but the volunteer kept us posted. She gave her a bath. Penny slept through the night, clutching the toy my daughter had tucked in her carrier. A loving couple had already stepped up to foster her. A day later, I got a new photo, Penny with a new pink collar, smiling excitedly from inside a dog car seat, ready for her next big adventure. There are days when grace interrupts your to-do list. You almost walk past it, like a penny on the street, but something stops you. And in that unexpected blessing, you find exactly what you needed. Carolina Picardo, Senior Manager, Managing Editor. An Unexpected Message from God by Anna Prieto. After her poodle went missing, she realized that God had bigger plans for her small family. "Teddy's gone," I cried. My husband Gus pulled me into a hug. We stood surrounded by shattered glass from our back door. While we were at the gym, someone had broken into our house. We'd searched all the rooms. The only thing missing were our wedding bands and some other jewelry, and our 7-year-old toy poodle, Teddy Pooh Bear. Gus and I didn't have children, so Teddy was our baby, our little girl. We usually took her everywhere, even to church. But that night, we left Teddy at home for just an hour while we went to work out, and now she was gone. Either she'd been scared by the break-in and run off, or she'd been stolen. I didn't know which was worse. I hated thinking of her out there alone in the dark, or with criminals who had goodness knows what plans for her. Tears poured down my cheeks. The police arrived and made their report. After they left, I shut myself in our room. I just couldn't bear to see anyone. Over the next few days, a reward for Teddy's safe return was set up by a local detective who'd seen our story on the news. While our friends and family searched the streets and put up flyers, I stayed in bed, crying my eyes out. 3 days after Teddy's disappearance, my mother called. "Mija, you can't just lock yourself away," she said. "Maybe this is a sign. Maybe God is telling you it's time for a 2-legged baby instead of just a 4-legged one." Although Gus and I had agreed that we would discuss alternative options if we didn't get pregnant by the time I turned 40, a fast approaching deadline, I wasn't so sure. Truth be told, I worried that becoming parents, what it would do to our dynamic. We were happy now, but our relationship hadn't always been this strong. Raising the tiny poodle puppy, a gift from Gus, had helped us reconnect. Now, coming up on our 20th wedding anniversary, Gus and I were stronger than we'd ever been. We were comfortable, just the three of us, and I wasn't sure what a life with children would look like. Still, Mom's words stuck with me. What if she is right? On Sunday, when Gus and I were at church, one of the other parishioners approached me. She said she'd heard about Teddy and was praying for a safe return, then added, "This could be God's way of telling you it's time for a 2-legged baby instead of just a 4-legged one." I practically gasped, the same message my mother had told me down to the very words. After someone at my office said the exact same thing on Monday, I was reeling. 3 different people, 1 message. I called Gus from work and told him that I wanted to start fostering children. He agreed. We signed up for certification classes the same day. 5 weeks passed, then the night before we were due to complete our training to become foster parents, our doorbell rang. Gus answered. I heard some muffled conversation, then Anna. I hurried to the door. 2 women were standing there. They recognized us from around the neighborhood, and in Gus's arms was a small gray bundle. Though her hair was shorter and dirtier, and the fur on her ears and tail had been dyed pink, I'd know that sweet little face anywhere. "Teddy," I cried, scooping her into my arms. The woman explained they'd found Teddy a few blocks away and recognized her from the posters. Teddy definitely needed some TLC, but after being bathed and fed and getting a quick checkup at the vet, her tail started wagging. By the time we all went to bed, she was back to her old self. As I drifted off to sleep that night, I said a prayer of thanks. Deep down, I had already begun to fear we would never get our little Teddy back. That night, something became crystal clear. I didn't need to worry about us becoming parents. Raising Teddy had brought us closer as a couple, and we had so much love for this little dog and still more to give. If anything, our time as parents of a fur baby had shown us how ready we were to become parents. Was that the lesson God wanted us to learn? It's been a little over 3 years since then. Gus and I adopted 2 wonderful children who have brought more joy into our lives than I could ever have imagined. Journey, who's now 3 years old, came to us just a few months after Teddy returned home. Recently, he was joined by a little sister, 1-year-old Destiny. Teddy has taken surprisingly well to the role as big sister. At 10 years old, she might be a little slower than she once was, but when the kids take out a toy to play fetch, she becomes a puppy again. Seeing all 3 of them playing in our yard, I can't help but think, if Teddy hadn't gone missing when she did, Gus and I would have continued as we always had, unaware of the incredible happiness awaiting us. I believe briefly losing Teddy helped us find the rest of our family. I'm Sandy Summers, and you're listening to Guideposts on Sun Sounds of Arizona, a 24-hour reading and information service for people who can't read print due to a disability. If you missed any part of this program, you may access it anytime on demand at www.sunsounds.org. In addition to the bi-monthly Guidepost magazine, each week we may be reading some of Guidepost's other daily devotions or inspiring stories from Guideposts online. Now we will continue with Guidepost magazine, February-March 2026. Living Longer, Living Better, Rediscovering Our Joy. Our golden years weren't feeling so golden. Did getting old mean letting go of the things we loved? By B.J. Taylor, Palm Desert, California. My husband Roger and I were sitting outside our house, taking in the desert sunset one November evening, something we like to do even after more than 30 years of marriage, when he asked, "What will you do if something happens to me? Would you stay here? Would you move?" Talk about ruining the mood. But I knew those weren't idle thoughts. Our life together had been active and adventurous until 2 years earlier when Roger suffered a stroke that required surgery to place a stent in his carotid artery. Since then, he'd needed three more surgeries, including a triple heart bypass that had me begging God to bring my husband back to me. Now questions of mortality hung over us. I worried about Roger, who had a family history of heart issues, and at 75 was 5 years older than me. I still wanted us to travel, to embrace new experiences, but I felt the opportunity slipping away. Roger had knee replacement surgery scheduled for the following summer, and that would entail months of recovery. It wasn't just his body deteriorating with age. I had my own knee problems. The days of playing 18 holes of golf, walking the course with my girlfriends were long behind me. Now I used a cart and played only 9 holes. "I don't know what I'll do," I said to Roger. "I don't want to think about it." But for weeks after that, pretty much all I could do was think about what might befall us. Would we be going down the same road as some of our friends? One had an upcoming heart valve replacement. Another was struggling with dementia. A third faced the return of an aggressive cancer. Would I have to hire a caregiver if Roger needed more help than I could provide? As I once overheard a woman about my age say at a coffee shop, "You're only one test result away from your life never being the same again." "How did you sleep?" I asked Roger one morning at breakfast. "I tossed and turned all night." "I heard you get up a few times. Are you okay?" "Everything hurts. My back, my shoulders, my neck, my knees, my feet, my side, my chest," he said. "It's no fun getting old." He tried to crack a smile. "So much for the golden years." I was sorry I asked. I hated to see him in pain, and I didn't know how to help. All I could say was, "I hope you feel better soon," which seemed so lame. Aging wasn't something you just got over like a cold. Gloom took hold of me. Even the things I'd enjoy most felt like a drag. I used to delight in golfing with my girlfriends and having breakfast afterward, but now the conversation seemed to revolve around everyone's health problems. I was talking with my good friend, Iona, after a morning foursome. Her husband had recently undergone the same carotid artery surgery Roger had, and she told me how scared she'd been. "Thank you for listening, BJ," she said. "How blessed we are to have people who really understand our worries and help us deal with them." I wish I had Iona's positive spirit. I didn't feel as if I'd said anything reassuring to her, and I didn't feel blessed, at least not lately. What did I have to look forward to? Roger and I wouldn't be going anywhere this summer while he recovered from knee replacement surgery. With daily high temps hitting the triple digits June through August here in California desert, we'd be confined to the house. But his knee was bone on bone, making even walking terribly painful. The surgery had to be done. That's why Roger took me by surprise when one day at the end of winter he said, "Let's book one of those Mississippi River cruises for June. On a paddle wheel boat, like we've always talked about." I was too stunned to reply. Roger wasn't done. "And I know you want to go back to Idaho," he said. "He and I had vacationed there several years ago. Why don't we go on a long road trip in July?" "What about your knee replacement?" I asked when I finally collected my wits. I've decided to wait on that, he said. It's too hot to be cooped up here all summer. You're okay with being away that long? I said, not quite believing what I was hearing. Was this really what Roger wanted? Maybe he'd picked up on my mood and was just trying to cheer me up. I worried about being far from his doctors, about whether he'd be able to get around on his bad knee. Let's do it, Roger said. He jumped into planning our trips, looking up options for Mississippi riverboat cruises, checking out places where we might like to stop on our way to Idaho. I was not all that sure that we'd be able to do any of these things, but he was so excited, I couldn't bring myself to burst his bubble. I had to talk to someone about my worries. Playing golf a few weeks later, I sought out Iona. Roger's planning fabulous things for us to do this summer, I said, filling her in on the cruise and the road trip. That all sounds wonderful, Iona said. Why aren't you more happy about it? I'm afraid, I said. Can I trust that these good times will happen? And even if they do, are they just building me up for letdown after Roger and I come back home and have to deal with our surgeries and health problems? Iona looked me in the eye. I have three words for you. Find the joy. So that was Iona's secret to staying positive. She knew what it was like to live with the realities of aging and caregiving. If she could find the joy amid those challenges, why couldn't I try to do the same? I gave Iona a hug. Thank you, I said. I needed to hear that. I got back in my golf cart and headed for home, my mind still on my friend's advice. Really, it echoed what the psalmist said. This is the day which the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. I needed to let go of my fears and leave the future in God's hands. Otherwise, I would keep missing the blessings around me in the present. The greatest gift of which was my husband. Rather than dwelling on what we couldn't do, he was seeking ways to do what he loved. He was in way ahead of me in finding the joy. Lord, help me be more like Roger and Iona and treat each day like the gift it is. I prayed as I pulled into our garage. Roger was in the living room. What cities does the riverboat cruise you were looking at stop at? I asked. His eyes lit up. Memphis is on the list, he said. What do you think about going out for some blues and barbecues on Beale Street? That would make a great date, I said. We spent the afternoon talking about the cruise and looking up the places we wanted to visit, my excitement building alongside his. That night, we went outside to watch the sunset. I rested my head on Roger's shoulder and squeezed my hand as the sun dipped toward the horizon, casting a glow across the desert landscape. I basked in the golden light and even more in the joy of this moment of togetherness with my husband. For more on this story, see Family Room. Encounters and connections. Sometimes God puts people in your path, even at Walmart. The Right Stranger by Denise Kennedy, Rock Hill, South Carolina. It wasn't like me, but I wasn't feeling so sunny that bright spring morning. And not for any particular reason. I have so many blessings, a great job, a loving family, good friends. Still, it was like I had a case of the Mondays on a Saturday. I had to pick up a few things at Walmart, but just didn't feel like being around people. Lord, let me get my shopping done quickly, I thought, pulling into the parking lot, and maybe you can help me get a better attitude too. I grabbed a cart and sped over to the store's skincare aisle for face wash. I turned the corner and, whoa, nearly bumped my cart into a woman who was standing right in front of the shelf I needed. I'm sorry, I said. I'll move, she said, maneuvering out of the way. I nodded, grabbed the face wash, and kept cruising down the aisles. 10 minutes later in produce, I leaned over to choose a bunch of celery. I looked up, and there she was again. Hey there, she said, and smiled. She had warm brown eyes and such a kind manner that I found myself smiling back. Looks like we're on the same path today, I said. I buzzed over to housewares and threw a kitchen towel in my cart. As I reached the end of the aisle, she turned into it. I laughed. Third time's the charm, I said. Right, she said. This is too funny. I finished shopping, went through the checkout, and pushed my cart out to the crowded parking lot. I was just a few feet from my car when, yep, you guessed it, she was two cars down from mine, putting groceries in her trunk. Hello again, I said. She turned around. No way. I'm Denise, I said, walking over. Anne, she said. That's when something came over me and I blurted out, Anne, I feel like I'm supposed to ask you if you need me to pray for you. She looked kind of shocked. I was too. I'd never once asked a stranger in a parking lot if they needed prayer. Maybe I'm out of line, I thought. Or not, that's okay too. Actually, I could use a prayer, Anne said. I just moved here from Virginia to help my dad. He has dementia. And caring for him, setting up doctor's appointments, making sure he's eating healthy and he's safe, is much more difficult than I anticipated. I'm never sure if I'm doing the right thing. I grabbed her hands and we bowed our heads. Lord, I asked, please help Anne make the best choices for her father's care. Thank you, Denise, she said. What do you do for work? That's just what I was about to tell you. I'm a holistic nutritionist, and I work with caregivers. She stared at me. You're kidding. Days earlier, I told her I'd met with the owner of a company offering support to families caring for aged loved ones, bathing, meal prep, rides to appointments. Let me get your contact information, I said, and I'll connect the two of you. I'd like that, Anne said. I hadn't wanted to be around anyone, but then the Lord put me in the path of the right stranger, not once, but four times. I walked back to my own car, feeling brighter. That's all the time we have today for Guideposts. Thank you for listening. My name is Sandy Summers. Stay tuned for more great programming on Sun Sounds.